Welcome back to Awakened Exchanges. I'm your host, Jay Rich, and you're listening to the sixth episode in my seemingly endless series, Deconstructing the Great Awakening Map. And as you can see, little Shadow here is wanting to be a part of this. And you can also see if you're watching only on the YouTube right now. We'll get more to that here soon. Anyway, I'm truly grateful to be here speaking with you, and I hope that you're continuing to enjoy as we take this deep dive on the strange and compelling web artifact. Sean Shumway returns yet again this week, and I'm hoping that both he and Chris will be joining me for next week when we get a little weird and talk aliens, the future, and psychedelics. So, you can always email me about other interesting topics or guests, and you can use the contact form on our website, or contact me on Twitter at Awaken Exchanges. I want to remind people that if you haven't already seen it, you can still find a copy of the high-res Great Awakening map in our show notes and on our website. That's just awakenedexchanges.com. Remember, if you go to the online archives, you're going to find a number of images out there, but the one that I'm sharing with you is the one that we're working through. Also, if you're checking out the Twitter feed or the Telegram channel, you can see the highlights that I've made to the map and how I'm grouping these topics together and from some of my earlier posts. I'm continuing to update my pinned Twitter threads and that Telegram channel, as I mentioned. I'm going to collect all the visuals that I include with the series. I'm hoping that you're still enjoying the threads, and if you need a link to the Telegram channel, it's in the show notes as well as on the website. I hope you engage with us in the exchange over there. Real quick, I also want to mention that I'm trying something new with YouTube, as I was alluding to earlier as Shadow jumped up on screen. I'm hoping to include video of me doing the intro from now on, as well as incorporating the still images that I'm going to include in the Twitter and Telegram feeds as part of the video, as opposed to just seeing the rotating logo going on. Hopefully you like it. Give me your feedback. It's going to take a little bit more time and work on my part, but as long as the upload time isn't horrendous and you guys actually do seem to like it, then I'm going to try and make it an ongoing part of the show until I can get the equipment to include full video with each episode. I do hope that full video is in the future, though, and that you'll join me for the ride. All right, I know I've given this disclaimer already before, but we're talking about a lot of conspiracy theories in this series, as well as some religious speculation and subjective experiences. I just wanted to say that again so you keep it in mind when we decide how to weigh all of these things together. Now, before we get back to the metaphysical, here's a brief rundown of our sponsors. As always, I want to thank all of you personally for your support. Just listening and sharing this podcast with your friends gives me a reason to keep providing the best content possible. If you have the means and would like to contribute personally, please take a look at our Patreon page, where you will get access to exclusive content and deals. There are already bonus videos available, and more are on the way. As for our other sponsors, Awaken Vapes was the first of the Awaken brands and has been helping you modulate your high with CBD-only high-terpene vape products since 2019. Genesis Farms has been making the highest quality medicinal RSO, among many other fantastic products, starting with the medical community back before 2010. And last but not least, the Caramel Corn Company, bringing you caramel corn the way it was meant to be. And remember, if you enjoy this podcast, please follow us on Spotify, subscribe to us on YouTube or wherever else you're listening, and if you can, leave a review or comment on Apple Podcasts. It really does help spread the word. You can also support us on Patreon or connect with us on the social media of your choice. We are at Awakened Exchanges on Facebook and Instagram, and at Awaken Exchanges on Twitter. All right now, stay tuned, and thank you for listening to Awakened Exchanges. Genesis Farms was founded on the belief in cannabis's ability to heal. Genesis Farms is more than a brand. They're a compassionate community of like-minded folks that generate top-quality cannabis products, made with love and care. Community outreach is always on their mind, and their partnerships with Grow for Vets and Parents for Pot was just the beginning of what they hope to accomplish in the coming years. You can find their products on the best dispensary shelves across the state of Oregon. Their RSO is the most consistent quality in the state. Their tinctures are second to none, and their personal massage oil will have you and your partner coming back for more. Find them on Facebook and Instagram, and ask for them in your local dispensary today. Don't forget to listen to Sean's interview right here on Awakened Exchanges. It's episode number 3. The Caramel Corn Company is bringing you caramel corn the way it was meant to be. Made with premium ingredients in small, handcrafted batches and completely gluten-free. Their flavors include original, roasted cashew, salted almond, mixed nut, spicy sriracha, white morsel macadamia, peanut butter, butterscotch, and my personal favorites, chocolate drizzle and raspberry caramel apple. I can't say enough about how delicious this caramel corn is. It makes a great gift any time of the year. You can find them for sale in Portland area market of choice locations, and hopefully again online soon when they get stocked back up. Please visit www.caramelcorncompany.com for more information today. And remember, buying local supports small businesses and keeps your money building your community. Last but not least, Awakened Vapes has been bringing you some of the highest quality CBD vapes since ringing in the new year of 2019. I became passionate about cannabis after a car wreck left me with major migraines, and no prescribed pills helped alleviate the symptoms. Having only tried cannabis a handful of times in high school and college, it was a doctor's recommendation that led me to give it another try. Only then did I realize that we'd all been at least a little misled about the health benefits of this amazing plant. Despite an unexpected break because of the vape ban, and then a global health crisis with COVID, the business is stronger than ever, and we invite you to check out our updated website today. We are still offering our 3 varieties with new and improved terpene formulations for enhanced flavor to go along with the custom blended effect profiles. Check back at www.awakenedvapes.com for any updates, and you can always email us about wholesaling or white labeling opportunities. We're back again. This is our 6th episode involving the Great Awakening Map. Are you guys sick of me yet? I certainly hope not, but I once again want to thank Sean Shumway for joining me on this special edition of Awakened Exchanges. We're going to continue our dive into the metaphysical parts of the map. You ready for this, Sean?
Absolutely.
All right. We're going to start with the I Ching, which I've actually had a fascination with for a number of years. And when I was inside, I was in a Shambhala meditation group. And she would actually do the I Ching every year as part of the New Year celebrations when we would do our Shambhala Day and all the other things. So
cool.
Interesting to even see those interpretations and all of that back then. But enough of that. Anyway, the I Ching. According to the ever-great Wikipedia, the I Ching is usually translated as the Book of Changes or the Classic of Changes. It's an ancient Chinese divination text and among the oldest of the Chinese classics. It's originally a divination manual in the Western Zhao period, which is 1000 to 750 BC, and over the course of Warring States period and the Imperial period from 500 to 200 BC, it was transformed into a cosmological text with a series of philosophical commentaries known as the Ten Wings. After becoming part of the 5 classics in the 2nd century BC, the I Ching was the subject of scholarly commentary and the basis for divination practice for centuries across the Far East, and eventually took on an influential role in Western understanding of Eastern thought. The I Ching is used in a type of divination called seriomancy, which uses apparently random numbers. 6 numbers between 6 and 9 are turned into a hexagram, which can then be looked up in the text, in which hexagrams are arranged in an order known as the King-Wen sequence. The interpretation of the readings found in the I Ching is a matter which has been endlessly discussed and debated over the centuries following its compilation, and many commentators have used the book symbolically, often to provide guidance for moral decision-making as informed by Confucianism, Taoism, Buddhism, and basically all Eastern religions from the Chinese sects. The hexagrams themselves have often acquired cosmological significance and been paralleled with many other traditional names for the process of change, such as yin and yang and wu jing. Have you had any experience yourself with the I Ching?
No, I haven't. I haven't ever worked with it or had a reading or anything. And if I'm, I want to clarify here for myself to make sure I'm understanding this correctly. So there is like the set of like wisdom books, or whatever. You do the work with the numbers, and that gives you reference out of the book for like whatever your reading is.
So there are 64 hexagrams which are arranged in that order. They called the King Wen sequence. But you take like a coin, like say a penny is what we were using inside. And you would flip these pennies, and you need six of them. And heads or tails are assigned either a one or a two. And based on that, they add up to a number between six and nine. And the first three rolls gives you the first part of the hexagram. And the next three rolls gives you the bottom part of the hexagram. So then you read it all as one thing, and it goes through a series because the top means something, the bottom means something, together they mean something else, and that's where the change comes through.
Right, I got it. So it's reminds me similar to like of a more Western-esque practice that of kind of like doing a tarot spread for a specific thing is where the cards lay have a specific meaning, and instead of the randomness of the cards coming up, it's whatever comes up with the coin flips, and then that reference to the numbers.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So it's in even earlier tarot tradition kind of divination sequence.
Oh, I'm sure. Basically. Like before those particular archetype symbols were laid down in a set deck. Sure, yeah.
Absolutely.
But it's the same kind of divination mechanism.
Absolutely. And I'm sure that I know that it's been said to do other things or be other things over the years, and it's changed. That part of the history I don't know that much about. You got to dive in for yourself.
Sure, and that makes sense too. And you know, with my own personal experience with divination, just like I was saying on the previous episode about seers happen to maybe see something as a different color, when with metaphysical things and tuning into the psychicness and all that kind of stuff, there always has to be room for personal interpretation. So yeah, I mean, it makes sense that these things are going to evolve and change a little bit.
Absolutely. Especially as they took on more and more importance over the years and people found them more and more accurate and or useful.
Mm-hmm.
So, did you want to read about the Tao?
Sure.
All right.
The Tao Te Ching. The map calls it the gateway to all understanding. Wikipedia says that it's a Chinese classic text traditionally credited to the 6th century BC sage.
That would be Laozi, I believe.
Sure. Laozi, also known as Laozu. The text's authorship, date of composition, and date of compilation are debated. The oldest excavated portion dates back to the late 4th century BC, but modern scholarship dates other parts of the text as having been written, or at least compiled, later than the earliest portions of Zhuangzi, I'm going to guess.
Close enough. Good attempt, at least.
That was around 460 BC.
So real quick, I just want to interrupt and say that 4th century BC, that means that's 6,000 years ago for the earliest part of these texts. So they've been built on for thousands of years, quite literally. But please, go on.
That's a good point. The Tao Te Ching, along with the Zhengzi, is the fundamental text for both philosophical and religious Taoism. It has also strongly influenced other schools of Chinese philosophy and religion, including legalism, Confucianism, and Buddhism, which was largely interpreted through the use of Taoist words and concepts when it was originally introduced to China. Many artists, including poets, painters, calligraphers, and gardeners, have used the Tao Te Ching as a source of inspiration. Its influence has spread widely outside East Asia and is among the most translated works in world literature.
Yeah, it's just, I actually had a very influential movie that was one of my first introductions and actually is what made me read the Tao Te Ching. Do you remember that by chance?
I had the exact same thought. I haven't delved into it yet, but yes, I'm assuming you mean the Tao of Steve.
That is correct, sir.
Yeah.
Donald Logue is one of the most underrated actors of any generation. I love, he's just, he's found a way to blend in and stand out. And people still seem to forget his face, but you know him from Vikings. You know him from Gotham. You know him from Blade. You know him from damn near everything if you start looking in the shadows. But this was 99, 2000 or so, indie movie. And he starts as this ex-college, you know, Lothario, and what he's doing in his current midlife stasis, and his whole philosophy, the Tao of Steve. And it literally just was one of those first movies that made me think deeper about those independent movie kind of revelations you could have. I was a big fan of Kevin Smith, and so I was starting to explore a lot of those indie movies, especially after you and I went and watched Dogma together as well. You know? But what did you take away from the Tao, Steve, or the Tao Te Ching?
Well, I'm not familiar with the original text, but what I translated out of it, so, and to give a little bit more, is this guy is like, if you don't know the actor, he's, especially back then, he was a little bit overweight. He was just kind of very average looking guy, but he had this knack for always getting women. And he breaks down, he actually applies principles of Taoism to his game.
Yeah. And he was running a good game.
Yeah. And then it's sort of a romantic comedy kind of thing. So of course he meets somebody he actually falls in love with and yada, yada, yada.
And he learns the true meaning of the Tao.
Right. But it was a way, I mean, even to just extract out those individual concepts of, you know, to get think of, and a lot of it is, you know, and it makes sense that this would be now reading or hearing this and reading this description of the Tao Te Ching, that it was a, such a foundational thing, because even in that movie, it talks about, and it was such a common thing in Eastern religions, it's like about all the, you know, the mindlessness of it, the, you know, the saying of, you know, you can't try to be the Tao, you are the Tao. Where in the movie, you know, his first rule to get women was to be desireless, you know, and it was that settling, it was that space of just being, you know, and that's such a, you know, that principle, you know, think about like, you know, the Buddhist mindfulness meditation kind of thing, you know, it's a similar kind of thing. It makes sense, like I said, that this is such a foundational kind of piece for all these other Eastern religions to grow out of.
It really is fascinating. It's also fairly short, yet you could read it 1,000 times and get 1,000 different meanings. I recommend it highly. Next, I guess, as we're buzzing through a lot quicker than we did before, thank you, by the way, for joining me again. And I'm going to go ahead and apologize for both of us. We're taking a stab at these pronunciations. I know we say it every week, but in case you're just joining us, thank you for bearing with us. All right. The Kabbalah, or the Jewish Tree of Life. Using the ever-amazing Wikipedia, which I should remind people to regularly donate. I try to even, hey, you know, we got a stimulus check coming up. Might as well chip in $5. Anyway, here's a brief rundown of what they say. The Kabbalah literally means reception, tradition, or correspondence, and is an esoteric method, discipline, and school of thought in Jewish mysticism. The definition of Kabbalah varies according to the tradition and aims of those following it. From its religious origin as an integral part of Judaism, to its later adaptations in Western esoteric traditions, Christian Kabbalah and the Hermetic Kabbalah in particular. Jewish Kabbalah is a set of esoteric teachings meant to explain the relationship between the unchanging, eternal God, the mysterious Ein Sof, or the infinite, and the mortal, finite universe, which is God's creation. To me, real quick, that kind of brings to mind the Atman Brahman kind of concepts, which we didn't cover in because it wasn't mentioned on the map, but maybe he hasn't studied that. I don't know. Anyway, I believe it's Atman is the all. It's God, the infinite, whereas Brahman is the universe, the knowing that you are separated from, and then become the infinite at Atman.
Sure. Yeah, yeah.
So, anyway, I hope I didn't just butcher that. write in, tell me so. I'll read it out here for you. So, Jewish Kabbalah is a set of esoteric teachings meant to explain the relationship between the unchanging. As I just read that, I'm going to go ahead and move on. It forms the foundation of mystical religious interpretations within Judaism. Jewish Kabbalists originally developed their own transmission of sacred texts within the realm of Jewish tradition, and often use classical Jewish scriptures to explain and demonstrate its mystical teachings. I've also had quite a few dabs, and when I try and read a lot of text all at once, I kind of trip over my words. So hopefully I'm not doing too bad of a job, and I'm enunciating well enough for you guys. All right, enough apologizing. Let's move on. One of the fundamental Kabbalistic texts, the Zohar, was first published in the 13th century, and the almost universal form adhered to in modern Judaism is Lurianic Kabbalah. The traditional practitioners believe its earliest origins predate world religions, forming the primordial blueprint for creation's philosophies, religions, sciences, arts, and political systems. Historically, Kabbalah emerged from earlier forms of Jewish mysticism in the 12th to 13th century Spain and southern France, and was reinterpreted during the Jewish mystical renaissance in the 16th century, Ottoman Palestine. Isaac Luria is considered the father of contemporary Kabbalah. Lurianic Kabbalah was popularized in the form of Hasidic Judaism from the 18th century onwards. During the 20th century, academic interest in Kabbalistic texts was led primarily by the Jewish historian Gershom Scholem. I do not know that much about the Kabbalah itself. I don't have a lot of experience with it, but I've been fascinated with it from the very little I do know. What about you?
Yeah, I don't know really anything about it other than, but I'm fascinated to dive into it because, you know, I always believe, as I've said time and time again, truth is universal. So I want to see, you know, I'm sure some of these things we've talked about are going to be coming up in this philosophy, and I'd love to get my hands on, you know, the language that it's described with from them.
My personal belief is it is all language, and it's a matter of them all trying to explain the same things, and if you can actually understand each of them and experience them in that way, you could actually kind of bridge those gaps.
Exactly, and, you know, you have to remember what we're trying to talk about here, you know, with source, whatever you want to call it. You know, almost any philosophy out there says, you know, this thing is bigger than what's here on this plane, you know, kind of like how it talks about here in the Kabbalah and the two different levels there. And so there's aspects of it, you know, that maybe one individual group can't get a hold of. So we get all these different perspectives off, and maybe they help fill in the gaps for each other. You know, and so we can get a little bit closer picture into what we can at least wrap our own brains around.
And one of the things I like to think about is we have all these different interpretations. The map talks a lot about ascension and ascended masters, awakening, that kind of verbiage. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, science talks about dimensionality and higher dimensions. And it's a matter of bridging those two worlds and being able to talk that same language and being able to really translate that. I'm really excited about what the next 20, 30 years hold.
Right. I can't for the life of me remember who said it, but I heard this great quote, and it said something along the lines of, ask a theologian to describe God. They'll tell you it has always been there, always will be, cannot be destroyed, is the moving force behind all things. Ask a physicist to describe energy. You know, I mean,
yeah, I like it. All right, why don't you read us the brief thing about Gnosis?
Gnosis is the common Greek noun for knowledge. The term is used in various Hellenistic religions and philosophies.
Now, I assume that they wanted to go into a little bit more about Gnosticism, but they didn't actually list that. And, well, you know what? There's enough to already cover on this map.
Right, and so am I, because I'll be fully honest, I have not, like, broken down and stared at the map too much myself yet, but is this just...
It'll,
like,
drive you crazy.
Is Gnosis just one of the words on there?
Exactly.
So, I mean, but I could see, you know, as you said, you know, these are the things that was part of his path of awakening.
Exactly.
And something that's going to start to get you down the path of the Greeks and the Greek philosophy. I mean, obviously there's going to be all kinds of things to open up there. So I could see definitely...
And I don't think he actually talks about it, but the Eleusinian mysteries are fascinating. Mm-hmm. And that would be right in that Greek gnosis. And some say that Jesus, during his travels, went to the Eleusinian mysteries, as well as to Alexandria, and through the Egyptian rites as well, and through all these other things. And I think that it was kind of his path trying to, if he was a real person, or even as a mythical construct, trying to bridge the gap of those old religions to the new one God. And if we could just get around the language, people, but, you know, we'll keep trying.
Mm-hmm.
Want to take alchemy as well?
Alchemy is, according to the Merriam-Webster Dictionary, a medieval chemical science and speculative philosophy aiming to achieve the transmutation of the base metals into gold. The discovery of a universal cure for disease, and the discovery of means identifying prolonging life, a.k.a. the Philosopher's Stone.
Now, I assume you have at least a passing knowledge about alchemy.
Well, I haven't, like, looked at the, like, the base, you know, their attempts to chemically and scientifically understand this, but I know, you know, like it lays out here, you know, it's this whole... transmutation are trying to really like make the periodic elements themselves shift into something else.
Well, and the
and
it's actually the basis of what turned into chemistry,
right,
as well, right?
Right.
But the Philosopher's Stone isn't, yeah, the base metals into gold, or the eternal life, also is the same as that eternal knowledge. It's a lot of that same,
right,
mystery school traditions when you start breaking a lot of that down. Now, some people say the higher you go, maybe you can transmute metals and all these other things, but that, I guess, we haven't seen any evidence of in our lifetimes anyway. Go ahead.
I will say also, you know, this was like, you know, where this term came from, alchemy, but in more modern times, and especially in these, you know, looking at the self and all these development things, I've heard the term used a lot, like in terms of soul alchemy, which is about, you know, we talked about before, about looking at those difficult situations and growing out of it and changing our perspective and transmuting what that event means to us by shifting our perception about it. So, you know, we're not changing one element into another, but that is an alchemical process in, you know, at least a metaphor for it that we can work with in our own lives.
Absolutely, 100% agree. All right, so ethereal bodies is the next term on the map. And the etheric body, or ether body, or aether body, which is AE combined, it's all talking about the same thing. It's a name given by Neo-Theosophy to a vital body or a subtle body propounded in esoteric philosophies as the first or lowest layer in the human energetic field or aura. It is said to be in immediate contact with the physical body to sustain it and connect it with the higher bodies. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I work with the aura quite a bit in my own work, and but I'm not going to expand on it too much now because if I remember right, later on in our outline here, there's a part, you know, it talks about the auras and the different layers. And this, to me, they are essentially similes for the same thing. So we'll dive deep into this a little bit later.
Perfect. All right. Well, you want to take Hermeticism?
I don't know, dude. I've never done that one before.
Well, yeah, I guess depending on what.
Hermeticism is a label used to designate a philosophical system that is primarily based on the purported teachings of Hermes
Trismegistus.
Yeah, him.
Yeah, sorry, I just noticed that word, and I'm like, I pronounced that for quite a while to get it right, so.
Anyway, these teachings are contained in the various writings attributed to Hermes, which were produced over a period spanning many centuries and may be very different in content and scope. The Emerald Tablet, also known as the
I think that's the Samaragedin. Yeah, Samaragedin.
Samaragedin tablet or the Tabla Samardina. Yeah, that word in ancient Greek is a compact and cryptic Hermetic text. It was highly regarded by Islamic and European alchemists as the foundation of their art.
Yeah, the Emerald Tablet, very fascinating image. I'm going to be putting that out there. I'm going to look it up right now so I can see it on my computer in front of me. But it's in just what it sounds like, an emerald tablet written in what looks like runes to me. But they translated it, and apparently this is one of the foundational texts and considered this, very interesting deep dive that I have not been able to do myself. Anyway, let's get on to Ubuntu, which I'll go ahead and take. That is not the Linux OS, by the way, but rather the philosophical term meaning humanity. It's often translated as I am because we are, or humanity towards others. In Zulu, they often use the phrase Ubuntu Ngumuntu Ngabantu, which translates to the belief in a universal bond of sharing that connects all humanity. Sounds a lot like the we are one and we are all connected philosophies.
Uh-huh.
Another thing that I had actually not heard of until, researching the map, I may have heard the word before, but I'd never done any research onto it. Even that little paragraph that I'd read there was news to me. What about you?
Yeah, I've never heard this term before. But yeah, I also equated to thinking like the whole, Gaia theory that the world is, one big interconnected organism, and that's the way I see it is, the way all the ecosystems and the way we fit into that too, And so, yeah, it's just that so the sharing that connects all humanity, that sums it up really well.
For me, a lot of what I've been equating this kind of thought to recently is the Big Bang and that point where all of the entirety of the universe was collapsed into that one pinpoint, and we literally were all connected. Every atom in this universe was literally a pinpoint, and now we're spread out across everything. So there is that kind of connection bond of all humanity, as well as, just a bond to the universe in general.
But I also look at it as, that's a good way to express it, but also keeping the thought of that, realizing that, yes, we're individuals, but we're also a collective, I think, we've seen historically, like politically and whatnot, things can be skewed one way or the other too far.
As a
way to relate to each other, I think it's kind of finding that balance space, as it said, it's often translated to I am because we are, that's really realizing that, yeah, you're part of this group, part of this community, and again, thinking, yeah, you have to be strong as an individual, we have to have strong cells to have a good body, but the body has to function overall together too.
Agreed. Well put. I think you're pretty familiar with this next term. What do you think?
A little bit. But I do have one other
thought
to add to that, too. And I can also see it tying in a little bit with the idea of quantum entanglement, too.
That's actually what I mean with my Big Bang thing. And
in fact,
I was going to say that word, but you had left that so perfectly. I was like, all right, I'm going to leave it. But that's what I mean with that. We're all at that one pinpoint. That's that we're all entangled. So what is good for one of us is good for all of us, or mm-hmm. It should be. In your thoughts, you should be doing what's good for all of us, not doing that selfish kind of hoarding greed that we need to breed out of our society somehow.
Well, it's also, sure, in those kinds of things, but also think of it in the terms of the way you treat yourself, if you treat yourself negatively too, you're going to feel that within yourself, that's also going to change how you function and what you put out into the world.
We have such a problem with self-talk, especially in our country, especially with our youth. Anybody under 50, I'm going to include in, bad self-talk kind of generation, mm-hmm. at the very least. And maybe it's been going on forever. But either way, I really hope that we're starting to change that with our children.
Yeah, I'm sure it has nothing to do with that. Our society goes back to a foundation of, you know, using guilt to control the public.
Well, guilt? What's that? I know nothing about it coming from this Catholic religion I grew up in.
Yeah. So, moving on to our next term, shamans. Shamanism is a religious practice that involves a practitioner who is believed to interact with a spirit world through altered states of consciousness, such as trance. The goal of this is usually to direct these spirits or spiritual energies into the physical world for healing or another purpose. They are known by various names all over the world, but are found in most, if not all, native and old world religions.
Yeah, and so it goes on to equate into their ancestral spiritual communication, which is definitely a big part of it, but it's only one part of shamanism, correct?
Right, and what I'll say here is what's described here, it's accurate, but it's very general. I mean, that reminds me of just a lot of metaphysical and energy healing work in particular. What is unique to shamanism is that often revolves a process of what's called soul retrieval. And you can think of it almost like a schizophrenic reintegration therapy, but on a more energetic level. It's, you know, when we've had a traumatic life event, and just like how, like you hear about when people have splintered personalities, that original part of themselves that feels so unsafe gets closed off from the waking world because it can't handle it. You know, energetically, the same kind of thing, like that we lose the connection with that past part of ourselves. And on the more energetic level, the shaman will actually trace back your energy line and pull that up and reintegrate it with your present self.
So it helps clear the energy. Sounds like a lot of chi and kind of prana. You could think it to a lot of those other systems where shamans are actually going into a different realm to do that work that would be done through other various systems and other religions or other philosophies.
Well, this is like, whether they have the label shaman or not, this is one piece of what the, whatever culture's traditional healer might do.
Gotcha.
Doing like, say, Reiki, Qigong, prana killing, something like that. That's a different thing that they probably have on their tool belt as well.
Okay. So a modern shaman would probably integrate these practices together from all over the place.
Yeah, and I would say they probably are going to be tying in a lot of psychology with it too, and especially like I said, early childhood stuff, and it definitely can relate to Jungian and archetypal symbolism, like what was lost before. There's definitely a merging of those worlds there.
All right. Well, I know we're just touching on these things, but let's go ahead and hit the next topic real quick. The pineal gland is a small endocrine gland in the brain of most vertebrates. It produces melatonin, a serotonin-driven hormone which modulates sleep patterns in both circadian and seasonal cycles. The shape of the gland resembles a pine cone and gives it its name. It's the only singular region of the brain, meaning that it's not mirrored in the left and right hemispheres, just like every other part of the brain is. Descartes called it the seat of the soul, and pine cone imagery can be found in many religions, including Christianity.
Yep.
Any thoughts on the initial set there?
So I haven't done much research into, like, I know there is a connection to the awakening process and the tuning into the awakening your psychic senses, so to speak, tapping into these energies, but I haven't really looked in directly to like what that physical function is and how it connects.
Well, like I mentioned, Descartes called it the seat of the soul. But it's also basically supposed to be the seat of the third eye as well,
Right.
It's that singular place there. In fact,
which the all of the chakras actually do connect and correspond with an endocrine gland.
Exactly. And on top of that, it's thought that our pineal gland is actually what produces endogenous DMT, which is present in our bodies as well.
Oh, okay. Well, that makes total sense then.
So DMT, the spirit molecule, is actually a book that I read. It's by Dr. Rick Strassman. It's a great resource. It's also mentioned on the map. It's an amazing read, fascinating, about the first actual government-approved trials for DMT in test subjects. Let's see. We'll talk more about DMT in the psychedelic section, but the map also says that we need to decalcify and activate our third eye. There are dozens of resources out there that claim to help you to do just this, with the theory being that people such as Dr. Reverend Christopher Macklin says that pineal gland calcification occurs due to fluoride exposure, such as that through a water source. Interestingly, other experts have also found evidence of this contributing to pineal gland calcification. What other experts? Well, the page of the website that went on for a long while but didn't mention any names of actual experts or resources to go look up any of that information, and I could only find self-referential information on there. But they also mentioned a kind of familiar name. You want to take a guess?
Is it everyone's favorite self-proclaimed expert, Corey Good?
Gotcha! Nope. David Wilcock, his cohort. Okay, I kind of fooled you there, but yes, I thought for sure they were going to mention Corey Good's name, but David Wilcock is actually the person that's mentioned on there. Technically, I would guess he was a little bit more credible of a source for a while, but now that they have been so tied in together, and they seem to have been going down a shared rabbit hole, that... Well, I hope everything is going all right for them on an energetic level as well. How about that?
That is a great intention to send out. You know, I will say this with it, though, about the whole, you know, supposed idea of fluoride in the pineal gland.
Yes, please.
It's, I would say, fair enough to say, pretty well known that the government will at least admit to the possibility of various psychometaphysical things, and that they have run tests for it themselves. You know, there's been, you know, documented CIA cases on remote viewing. There's, you know, the whole psychic unit of the army that they made, you know, the men who start goats about, all that kind of stuff.
There's a fascinating book out there about how the CIA used to dose people. And it's not just little test dosing, but like Ted Kaczynski, they fucking made the Unabomber. Charles Manson was being dosed by the CIA in San Francisco. And they were the ones who were giving him his LSD to go dope these people up and cause his mayhem. It's just fascinating what they would be willing to do.
Right. And, you know, and so that is a credible, you know, I'm not saying there is, you know, we're not at the point of saying there is proof that things have been essentially sent out or intentionally sent out to reduce our openness.
Yeah.
But there's enough of these little pieces pointing to it that say it is a probable idea. I could see it happening that, you know, that the world, probably all the world's governments, you know, it's not just the crazy mystics who are into this stuff. You know, if they're doing their own research into it, I say they're going to find the same things that all these religious philosophers have of these concepts, you know. And, you know, if you want to believe that our government might do things to control people, like, I don't know, dose them with LSD, why is it not too far a leap to say that they may put something in our water to block our awakening?
I don't know if I would go as far as to say probable, but I think it's at least possible.
Yeah, and okay. I think that's a more fitting term, sure.
And I think that it's highly possible that they would do it if they knew it to be intentional, and they would also do it if they didn't know it to be intentional, and they really did just mean it to be a good intention to build up the calcium on our teeth.
That is entirely possible. Yeah.
So,
yeah, after all, you know, look how many medical things we've tried and then learned from and whatnot. So, you know, asbestos, for example, or well, that was insulation, but still.
Hey, yeah, let's go lobotomies, shall we?
Right.
Anyway, We're actually going to move on into a new section that I'm saying practices and terminology. We're still in the metaphysical sections of the map, but these are more one-offs and kind of lightly connected things. So sun gazing was a fairly new term for me. Had you heard about it this before?
I have.
You want to read this then?
Sun gazing is the act of looking directly into the sun during dawn and dusk. It is sometimes done as part of a spiritual or religious practice. The human eye is very sensitive, and prolonged exposure to direct sunlight can lead to solar retinopathy. Pterygium?
Pterygium? Yeah, good enough. I don't know.
Cataracts and often blindness. So, yeah, obviously we don't want to stare at the sun too much, but I have actually, and looking a little bit to the whole opening up the pineal gland thing itself, heard of this as a practice that's supposedly supposed to help decalcify it.
Interesting. I would want to know the science behind it, but I would also, if I were to do so, maybe a pair of those glasses so you can look at the eclipses, something like that or something, make the sun. But even then, it's not supposed to be staring at it. So,
right.
Yeah, this is not something that I would go ahead and recommend or suggest to our listeners out there doing.
No.
Willy-nilly. Oh, God, I better cut that out.
PSA, do not stare at the sun.
All right. This next term I had at least heard of, and I've done a little bit myself. I know you have as well. You want to tell us about it?
Qigong is a millennia-old system of coordinated body postures and movements, breathing, and meditation used for purposes of health, spirituality, and martial arts training. Now, so my experience with it is very first was when I was in a massage school. We had a whole unit on energy modalities, and our teacher had done some Qigong herself and knew somebody who was like, had been doing it for a very long time, and he had him come in and actually teach us a routine. Now, what he explained it as, it's what is known as qi cultivation. It's a way to kind of, through these movements and breath, build up and gather this universal life force, so to speak. And it is, I can't remember, either a precursor or a offshoot of a tai chi. I can't remember. One came first and gave birth to the other, so they're very interrelated.
I think Tai Chi is the more ancient. I can't swear to it, but I'm pretty sure that's the way it went. And then Qigong was the later development.
Yeah. And while I have not done much research into this modality myself, I know also it can also be used as a way to, as a healing modality, in that you do the movement, cultivate this energy up yourself, and then direct it to the patient.
Interesting.
And in fact, they believe that part of it is, you know, it was also martial arts training, and it's, there are some that believe they taught this like to the warriors so they could even just do like bits of self-healing during battle.
Well, I think you've covered a whole lot more than I knew about it. Did you want to say anything else before I take the next topic?
And, you know, this is something when I'm doing it myself is, yes, because I have my own energetic sensitivity, I can feel things moving that way. But I will say, you know, whether it's this, yoga, you know, other forms of martial arts, you know, there is something to be said for the benefits, even on a physiological level, of slow, intentional movement and coordinated breath work.
I totally equate it with yoga and moving meditation kind of a thing.
Yeah, for me. Absolutely.
So the next thing is actually a book. The whole title is written out on the map, and I actually have this book in my nightstand and have had it since before I had the map. I read a couple of chapters and then got sidetracked, although I am still trying to incorporate it. So it is Tibetan Dream Yoga, The Practice of Natural Light. It's a book by Chogyal Namkhai Norbu. And in it, he gives instructions for developing clarity within the sleep and dream states. He goes beyond the practices of lucid dreaming that have been popularized in the West by presenting methods for guiding dream states that are part of a broader system for enhancing self-awareness called the Dzogchen. The map links past life recall as well as lucid dreaming to this book. The latter, at least, should be obvious, as I just read it, but I'd have to finish it before I could tell you if they claim past life recall is popular. I do know that 5D talks a lot about Dzogchen Buddhism and how he has been studying that, and that has been his current path since, at least after the latest version of the map that I was dealing with was released.
Okay.
Anything else you want to talk about on that?
It sounds like it'd be something very interesting to get into. Obviously, you know, I believe very much that our dream state is a, you know, no matter how metaphysical you want to get with it, or you can go psychological to the unconscious, you know, it is definitely very self-illuminating, introspective state when we can really look at ourselves if we can at least get to this lucid state of having some control in our dreams. And, you know, going off of that, I would say, sure, why wouldn't that be an idea if you ascribe to the idea of past lives to begin with? You know, why couldn't you explore it this way just as easily as having a therapist take you through a regression?
Yeah, for me, I think that I've always been fascinated with lucid dreams. I used to have a couple of them. I used to have very vivid dreams. But I stopped dreaming at some point while I was inside. Mm-hmm. If it wasn't while I was inside, I would have assumed that it was because of the cannabis, because I know that THC has been known to lessen dreams, or at least I think dream recall. And I assume that's something to do with the chemical, blocking the chemical process or something along those lines.
Sure.
But even during Sober October, my dreams didn't come back a whole lot. So it would have been nice, but if it had, it, you know, didn't affect me enough to where I stopped smoking throughout the rest of the year. I will be trying it again here in a few months. Bear with me. So I think you might be more familiar with this next set of terms than I am, so I'm going to let you take that.
Sure. Dowsing and geomancy are linked on the map, and according to geomancy.org, dowsing is important to geomancers for several reasons. First, geomancy means divination of the earth. For European geomancers, dowsing is the divinatory tool of choice. L-rods are excellent tools to look at the earth energies that are found at sacred spaces and in people's homes. Dowsing also comes into the exploration of sacred crops and the connection between crop circles and sacred space. But most important, dowsing is a tool that can open the geomancer and you to a much more active relationship with intuition and creativity. This is critical to the geomantic path.
Have you had much experience with this?
Yeah, in my group in Seekers of the Stones, we have actually, this was more for the purpose of like doing land healing, so to speak, but in tapping into the earth energies that way. And, you know, and we work a lot with, like, yes, tools are very, very helpful, but we also work that ultimately it comes down to intention. So it's about what you feel and experience and connect with on that more internal level. And so I've worked with that a bit. I've also worked with what are called ley lines.
Which, I'm very interested in the subject, but I don't know much detail.
So they are essentially, if you think of like the meridians that run through the body in traditional Chinese medicine, these are meridians of energy that run through the earth.
Of the earth as a body itself, as a whole structure, seems to make sense nowadays.
And, you know, you hear about like people are drawn to these places with like great spiritual energy, so to speak, or whatnot. Those can almost be thought of as like earth chakras. And so there's actually this whole like pooling and these lines that run through.
I hear that Mount Shasta is one of those, and I can't remember what the other ones are, but they're very famous.
For example,
natural
people,
locations.
Yeah, or like, and towns will spring up around it. That's why there's such a metaphysical community in Sedona, Arizona.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And then so with dowsing, you know, I think a term more people are familiar with, you can also use it, you know, when people would be plotting their lands, they would actually use dowsing to find the water table.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. That's the only thing I was familiar with the term for. I didn't know about the rest.
And it's all part of the same broader practice, though. You can be searching for, you know, different things in the ground as well.
I have heard about them using it, I believe, in Edgar Cayce's ventures when he was searching for oil and or gold.
Sure. And something that you can connect to a little more is dowsing rods, they essentially work in the same principle as the pendulum. You know, it's just about setting that intention, and they just turn and point you to where you want to go.
Gotcha.
And you can even, like, you could even say, you know, in the same way you can do yes, no things with the pendulum, you could say, you know, swing to the right for yes, swing to the left for no, and, you know, you can work with them in very much the same way.
Very interesting.
I can recommend a good book for anyone that wants to dive deeper into this. It's called Needles of Stone by Tom Graves. And while it approaches originally from the purpose of dowsing and finding for water, he talks about different things could be in there. Okay, to for example, to take things into more of a paranormal realm, which I know is an interest of you.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you know, there can be, you've heard about how sometimes there was an actual, like, spirit who hasn't crossed over, but sometimes just like the memory of an event can be, you know, create the loop, so to speak.
Yeah.
Well, sometimes that can be like trapped in the energy of the land, you know, and so it talks about, you know, why sometimes some of those things can happen.
So like Gettysburg is a famous example of that. The soldiers trapped in that one moment of time, as opposed to the ghosts themselves kind of free roaming around.
Right. And the title Needles of Stone, that refers to, as I was making the analogy before, to like, you know, the chakras and ley lines and all that, you know, you go to these ancient sacred sites where there are, you know, big pillars of, you know, stone embedded in the ground. That's almost like people doing earth acupuncture to move and harness and work with these energies.
Okay.
And through it, he actually tours around and visits and looks into the history of some of these ancient sites.
Very cool. Thank you for the resource. The next term was new to me as well, but didn't seem to be a big one. Divine download, which they call a message we get from our creator, reminding us how incredibly resilient we are and guiding us to the answers that we need to get through this difficult-ass thing we call life. And that is actually a direct quote from the website that I found at, when I DuckDuckGo'd that. And for some reason, I don't have that listed right now. That said, it's basically just, you know, listening to your intuition. It's those messages you get when you're actually paying attention.
And I would say when you're tapping a little more to that intuitive side, you know, and those reassuring messages. And but I want to make a distinction here is, you know, anyone who is aware and starting to do this work can receive, you know, these affirmations and things kind of like this is referring to.
Yes.
For, you know, those of us like myself and who have gone into, you know, really getting deep into the awakenings, you know, when we talk about downloads, it's obvious it's when, you know, when we experience like a big new level of understanding about something coming through, a true shift in our perception. Like, for example, I recently experienced one myself when I, it was on some levels very difficult, but when I realized my marriage wasn't working and I actually had the conversation with my ex-wife to do that, as soon as I did that, I felt the energy of all my fear of abandonment purge out of me, and I felt this overloading reassurance, not like, oh, everything's going to be okay. Like, it truly shifted my perception around my ideas of community, and like, and I really, really, really like see a life in a whole new way.
It was a big confrontation on a level that you were not used to handling, and you handled it in a way that was, let's say, revelatory to your being, and it changed the way you looked at things and how you actually functioned afterwards, is what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
And, you know, other people talk about, you know, and like whole new information will come in for some people, almost similar to kind of like when you see in The Matrix, and you know, when Trinity needed the helicopter program, and boop, and then all of a sudden she can fly a helicopter. You know, there have been people that have experienced things like that.
I know Kung Fu.
Yeah.
Let's see. The next topic, QHHT, or Quantum Healing Hypnosis Technique, actually takes us back to last week's episode and Dolores Cannon. If you remember, she was responsible for the first, second, and third wave volunteers and that book and whole concept there. In her book, or in this technique, the QHHT, it allows people to access a part of themselves that holds all of the answers, supposedly. Some people call this the higher self, the oversoul, the superconscious, and that it allows, they say that it allows for past life recall, access to higher mind, and the oversoul, which was a new term, which was actually, I believe, written twice on that whole map. So,
okay.
But basically, that's the higher self. So if you're calling it the same thing, it sounds like you start going in circles sometimes. It's like, okay, you're saying, you're repeating yourself, but I think we're getting the point a little bit.
You know, this sounds similar to me to, this is a good reminder that, you know, the old saying, all paths lead home. This sounds a lot to, you know, the part of themselves that holds all the answer, you know, again, the higher self, you know, what we're trying to tap into with that Buddha state with meditation. You know, it's, I think it's just another road, another technique to access those, you know, bring it to psychology and the collective unconscious, you know, it's all that same kind of thing.
Absolutely. Why don't you take this next one? I'm pretty sure you know about it as well.
The Law of Attraction, popularized in the book, The Secret. The Law of Attraction is a philosophy suggesting that positive thought brings positive results into a person's life, while negative thoughts bring negative outcomes. It is based on the belief that thoughts are a form of energy and that positive energy attracts success in all areas of life, including health, finances, and relationships. There's a lot more to it for those that believe wholeheartedly, though.
In that lot more to it, I know there's like not just, you know, thinking, I want this, I want this, I want this, I want this. That's actually going to create the desire of wanting something.
Mm-hmm.
It's about treating it like you already have it, treating it like you're already, you know, stepped in the right direction kind of a thing.
Yep.
We've talked about this before, I think, a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's... I'll just bring it back to the point of, yes, everything, any change you want to create in your life starts with intention. But the idea and, you know, getting your head in the right place. But I want to say you also must follow it up with the physical action in the real world too.
Well, the next term on here is the 432 hertz miracle tone. It's said to raise positive vibrations. Listening to the 432 hertz frequency supposedly resonates inside our body, releasing emotional blockages and expanding our consciousness. 432 hertz is known as Verdi's A and is an alternative tuning that is supposedly mathematically consistent with the universe. Music based on 432 hertz transmits beneficial healing energy because it is a pure tone of math fundamental to nature, the universal music of sacred geometry. For me, when I look up the 432 hertz stuff, I instantly look at cymatics, which mm-hmm. I think we get into actually pretty soon. Anything you want to say about 432 hertz in particular?
You know, I haven't dived deep into this, but yeah, I've definitely seen the cymatic examples and the massive difference in the patterns that show up in the water. And again, I don't know much about this frequency, but I know that sound healing and working with vibration, you know, using it for different things is a very, very common practice. And if you think about it, you know, we are vibration. And, you know, this is something that can actually be measured. You know, they talk about all the time how different frequencies affect us.
Well, and we can move things with sound, mostly small objects at this point. Mm-hmm. But there is a tradition of thought where Buddhist monks use a series of instruments all played together that resonate at this frequency, and they're able to actually levitate big boulders up cliffs and things like this.
And I would say, I don't know, but I would bet that, like, at least theoretically, I'm sure, like, the frequencies, the math of that could be figured out very easily.
I don't know about very easily, but I think if people put their minds to it, it would be something that we could be able to deal with.
Yeah, because when you talk about resonance, and for those of us, this is a very, very common, scientifically understood concept, and a very simple example of it is if you take two guitars, hold them up close to each other that are tuned the same, you pluck one string, that same string will start to vibrate on the other one. when things vibrate and certain and hit into a certain what's called resonance, the way the sound waves line up perfectly, it creates this expansion of the vibration.
Absolutely. I think there's a lot more to that. There was also a school of thought that levitating objects is actually a lost science that we'd had in the Atlantis era or those kind of years, which is how some of the next generations were taught how to do so, to move stones such as Stonehenge and build the pyramids and things like that. Obviously, no evidence for that, but also the giant ramp structure seems really impossible the more and more they looked at it and things like that. So we still don't know how it was done.
Mm-hmm.
And we also know that the Sphinx is significantly older than Egyptologists had wanted us to believe. There is erosion damage from at least 10,000 years ago. It was built for Leo 10,000, where it was in the sky, 10,500 BC, which is 12,500 years ago, which also happens to coincide with the first of the asteroid impacts and everything else that supposedly sent Atlantis into upheaval, but before the ones 1,000 years later that wiped out all of the rest of it. Mm. Huh. Moving technology around somewhere else, trying to get things around. It is a fascinating idea, at the very least.
Sure. You know, going back to this, these frequencies about, you know, positive influence, you know, whether this 432 hertz has been, you know, fully established or not, a more recent example of just using sound for healing purposes, something I mentioned to you the other day.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I remember this. To my knowledge, last time I checked, they had not moved to human trials yet or anything, but they have actually yet now found the exact frequency to destroy cancer cells in petri dishes in the same way you hear about, you know, the opera singer who can shatter a glass with their voice, you know.
And so we have to be able to target that and make sure it's not going to deal with healthy cells. I'm sure there's a lot of science to be done, but
yeah, we're probably, like I said, a good ways out from, you know, full application to prescribe this as a treatment, but the path is being laid out. And I think as we understand it more, while chemistry has done great things and brought us so far, I think a lot of medicine is going to be turning to and incorporating physics as well.
I'm going to be fascinated with the medical field for the next decade and seeing where things go, especially mm-hmm. as Neuralink seems to be happening a whole lot quicker. I know I keep bringing it up, but it's just...
That's just frightening.
Yeah, very frightening, and I hate that I keep using this word, but fascinating thought.
Well, yeah.
I just can't get my head wrapped around that and what it could do for or maybe to humanity.
Yeah.
All right. So crystals is a topic that I think is so wide open that I'm going to leave it that way and let you talk about it off the cuff.
Okay, so I use stones a lot in my own personal practice, you know, and this is something that has, again, yet to be 100% rigorously scientifically proven, but has been part of metaphysical spiritual practices of every culture, just about.
And if nothing else, is intention and intentions of millions of people over thousands of years also building up into this, if you go into the collective consciousness idea.
Yep, absolutely. You know, and I'll say this about metaphysical tools in general. Yes, they are said to be imbued and have a certain energy themselves, but to a certain degree, they are also all about psychological triggers. Remember, essentially every experience we have happens in our own mind and as a result of our own perception.
Absolutely.
So if we're not personally connecting something, nothing's going to happen. And so, again, any metaphysical tool, whether it's stones, no matter what your particular rituals are, your symbols, whatever, yeah, they kind of carry their own journey, their own, but it's because we relate to them and what it really unlocks for us. It's you know, almost like a psychological trigger to open ourselves to these kind of things.
Yeah.
So to a certain degree, kind of like you're talking about that, you know, the ideas around stones and crystals, you know, there's been this idea of building in the collective unconscious, yeah, because we have this personal resonance with it. And, you know, so partially, yes, it's opening us to that. But I have, you know, I can only give my own personal and anecdotal experience with this. But yeah, different stones bring different things forward. You know, there are ones that moved block energy, that are ones that, you know, will raise positivity. There are ones that, you know, will help you raise your vibration. And I can list them all, but you know, there's so many out there.
Yeah, it's just it's a whole other podcast. It's a whole other series of podcasts, because you could just go indefinitely about each individual stone. And people do. There are encyclopedias of these things out there, mm-hmm. and ever expanding.
Yeah, it is a more spendy book, which is why I don't own it myself. But a good resource is called Love is in the Earth, and the author just identifies herself as Melody.
Okay. Well, thank you for the crystals information. We had just talked a little bit about cymatics, so I'm going to go ahead and give a little definition and mm-hmm. talk. It's basically a subset of modal vibrational phenomena. The term was coined by Hans Jenny, a Swiss follower of the philosophical school known as anthroposophy. Typically, the surface of a plate, diaphragm, or membrane is vibrated, and regions of maximum and minimum displacement are made visible in a thin coating of particles, paste, or liquid. This fascinating process produces something akin to sacred geometry. It is unbelievable, and I'll be including a few pictures, but you should definitely look it up.
Yeah, in fact, talking about not only akin to sacred geometry, but I believe they found the, I can't remember what it is, but a specific frequency will actually produce the flower of life.
I was going to say, and that's one that we talked about last week, I believe, on our episode as well, and I put a picture of it up.
Okay.
So, yeah, please dive into it. Go take a look at the pictures I'll be posting this week for cymatics, but we can't really do it justice here. Let's just go with fascinating. Oh, God, I need a new word.
Well, and what I'll say is this one that, you know, really has its main impact visually when you see these patterns emerge.
Yeah, it's definitely a visuals. You need it. You want to take astral travel?
Astral travel. Astral projection is a term used in esotericism to describe an intentional out-of-body experience that assumes the existence of a soul or consciousness called an astral body, that is separate from the physical body and capable of traveling outside it throughout the universe.
So there have been some pop culture references to this as of late. I'm specifically thinking of, what was it? The Conjuring, where he, you know, was an astral traveler as a child, and then he blocked that off, and then his child accidentally gets stuck in a realm. I'm pretty sure that's it. Mm-hmm. It's one of those horror movie genre films that I think they made 3 or 4 of. But there's, you know, it's becoming more and more prevalent in, you know, ancient astronaut and history documentary kind of shows, things like that. But it's been talked about in religions for thousands of years.
Yep. And to expand on it a little bit more, so astral travel can be think of very similar to lucid dreaming, but you're awake and kind of drop into a meditative state and can access those that, you know, have that same freedom you have in lucid dreaming, but you're a little bit more conscious, and it differentiates because there is what can be considered out-of-body experience, to where you're like more traveling and around the physical world here, where astral travel, you might be going a little bit into, say, alternate dimensional spaces, so to speak.
Okay.
And I'll say, you know, this is how it was thought of as a long time as actual traveling. But I like to think of it a little bit better this way. Is if, you know, you think, again, everything is all one interconnected, you know, from a more quantum state, and it's only, you know, everything we experience is through our observation, is that we're not really traveling, so to speak. Rather, we're shifting our observation point.
We're projecting our consciousness to a new point in time, very much like remote viewing, which I don't know if we go over in this kind of stuff, but there have been, you know, the government paid people contracts for years studying this stuff, and Russell Targ is a very good resource if you want to research into it. I'm sure we could go on more, but anything before I move on?
No, I mean, we could... Yeah, this is kind of like the survey version of all these, so I mean, we could...
Yeah, we could go on indefinitely.
We could make like a whole cast probably of each one of these subjects, so...
Well, short of that, because I'm sure that these people are getting tired of hearing me talk, but I appreciate you helping me break this up. Let's talk about the Akashic Records. Mm-hmm. In Theosophy and Anthroposophy, the Akashic Records is a compendium of all universal events, thoughts, words, emotions, and intent ever to have occurred in the past, present, or future in terms of all entities and life forms, not just human. It's like the book of records in, you know, Christian thought, except it's not just for humans. It's for all life. It's all everything. It's the, yeah, it's the universal record.
And now I remember, yeah, there is all that there. And as far as our personal Akash, if I remember correctly, on one of the videos you showed me about the one of the speakers from the Edgar Cayce Institute.
Yes.
Talking about how... as our soul moves from different planets to have different experiences, that our Akashic remembrance, that, you know, that as it's tied to our soul, actually stays here on Earth when we go have our experiences at other planets. So it's something very tied to our human experience.
Interesting.
At least according to that
theory. To the personal Akash, or mm-hmm. Yeah. And well, I think that that's the difference between, like the personal book of life with your records versus the book of universal records or something.
Sure.
But there is this guy who I'm going to probably butcher his name, but I'm going to try anyway. Drenvalo Melchizedek. And he's a New Age spiritual authority that believes that meditation is the path to accessing the sources of information or Akashic records. Moreover, through meditation, people can achieve and receive guidance about spiritual progress. You can also clear your mind and body, as well as achieving higher levels of awareness. Basically, meditation has been the way. I know that in the Tibetan Book of Dreams that I was talking about earlier, one of the things they talk about is trying to go into that meditation state once you're in a lucid dream, and how quickly you're able to let go of the ego because you're already that one step removed.
That makes sense.
Things like that. I would be very interested in trying to meditate my way to the Akashic records from mm-hmm. within a lucid dream. But
and another function that is of the Akashic records that is not necessarily talked about as often, you know, for just general looking at past history of our lives and whatnot, is something I actually work with in my healing work, is that sometimes when somebody has really, really, really severe issues with like one of their chakras, when it's basically just blown out and dead, we have sort of a bank of spare parts, so to speak, in the Akashic records, and I can actually tap into it, and sometimes people need a new chakra installed, so to speak.
A new chakra upgrade. I like it. Right. I wonder if that, you know, helps you along the spiritual path, or, you know, takes you a reset to get into.
Well, the way it equates very much to the same idea of with massage work. Okay, so you develop pain in your upper back and neck from being in front of a desk all day. Now you can go see your massage therapist, get some work done to feel better, but if you don't make those changes in your life, that pattern is going to return.
Absolutely. I notice in my back right now.
Yeah. So same thing with you know, if we remember from our previous cast, you know, the different chakras relate to different aspects of our lives. So say that first one that about our sense of survival and safety, and we live in a lot of fear. Now say you've had, you know, horrible traumatic experiences and where you've completely blown out that chakra. You come see me put in a new one that, while yes, that will help you along your path of healing, if you don't ultimately make the choice yourself to start living in a more secure, safe state, those same energetic issues will start to show up again. You know, it's gotcha. It's the same idea. You know, you have to do the self-care to make the work last and take hold.
Well, I appreciate the information on there. I know that that's something I need to start incorporating, not just an exercise and diet routine, but a actual physical routine for my muscles. I need to get back into yoga. There's a whole lot that I would like to be doing. And I have the time to actually write that schedule now and to make that happen. So
it all starts with intention.
Beautiful. Yeah, and it's on the list this week. It's going to happen one of these days, people, I'm telling you. All right, let's go talk about the Star Merkaba vehicle. I had not heard this term, but after looking it up, I guess that I had kind of heard of it vaguely. The word Merkaba is actually composed of three separate words. Mer, which means light, Ka, which means spirit, and Ba, which means body. Put together, these three words can connote the union of spirit with the body, surrounded by light. A Merkaba star is employed by seekers and real walkers to teleport into astral dimensions and connect to higher consciousness. They're basically saying it as it's what people are using to intentionally travel up to higher dimensions.
Mm-hmm.
Had you heard about this before?
I had not heard this exact term, this Star Merkaba vehicle, but I've definitely heard Merkaba before. And what that is, it's six-sided. It's almost like a three-dimensional Star David, so to speak, only it's 6 points. That is right, 6 points.
I think I have a picture of that that I'm going to be putting up this week as well.
Yeah, that would be good to get that visual. And yeah, and if you think about it, it's like, because you form the shape almost like by two triangles intersecting, you know, the top and the bottom. And I almost think of it as you think of like, you know, the flow of both that Earth Kundalini energy rising up and that heavenly celestial energy coming down, if you want to equate it to the more like Eastern representations.
Very cool. Thank you for explaining that better for us. Mm-hmm. You want to talk about fasting a little bit?
Fasting is essentially giving up food or something else for a period of time, mostly done as a way to focus your thoughts on God. While fasting, many people read the Bible or other religious texts, pray, or worship.
Any other thoughts on it?
You know, I haven't experimented much with like fasting in terms of not eating myself, but I can see the connection, the relevance, and the fact of, you know, giving up the distractions of daily life, you know, brings us back more to that centered place, you know, and even if, you know, when you think about eating is, you know, and how much do we really need to eat to survive, you know, and it can actually, you know, shift, you know, the way we think, you know, obviously when we're not getting that chemical input of the food, you know, things are going to function a little bit differently. And maybe that is, you know, another way to achieve an altered state.
Well, I don't use it for this particular purpose, but I do go through an intermittent fast most every day. I pretty much stop eating by 8 o'clock at night, and I don't eat again until at least 11, but most of the time 12, 1, 2, 3. I tend to eat one or two meals a day, and I don't really regulate myself as far as what I'm eating beyond that. Mm-hmm. And that's been a good, easy way for me to keep my maintain weight kind of stuff, having dealt mm-hmm. with my diet issues in the past, and has also definitely made me realize my body's processes a little more and be in tune with when I'm actually hungry, as opposed to just wanting to go to the fridge or pantry and grab cookies or something and snack mm-hmm. my way to another 20 pounds.
Right.
So,
you know, that's the whole aspect of it I hadn't even considered, but makes sense, is that, you know, sure, just turning into those body sensations of hunger and moving through them. I mean, that could be a path and opening to all sorts of introspection, you know. That could be, you know, the idea of looking within and looking at ourselves can start in all ways, so why not with that?
Yeah, absolutely. And as for the ultimate fasting, this is actually a term that they talked about today on JRE, Joe Rogan, but I had only heard about reading this. Have you heard of a breatharian?
I had not heard that term, but yes, I've heard of this concept before.
Okay. So a breatharian is a person who can, under the proper conditions, live with or without eating physical food. It has not been proven by physical science, just so I want to point that out there. Have you heard? You said you have heard about this. Mm-hmm. What have you heard?
So apparently they decided, I guess, then from what I read, that the results were inconclusive. But they got this guy who said he was a guru of some kind, which and they pointed out in the article that you have to be careful with that term, because there are no, like in other religious sects, how there are certain qualifications to carry a title. Basically, anybody can call themselves a guru.
Yeah.
So, you have to take that term with a grain of salt. But that being said, this guy apparently spends most of his time just meditating in a cave. And he was one who claimed that, he didn't need that. He could just metabolize the chi of the universal energy, so to speak. So they actually locked him in a room with sensors in his toilet, because that was their logic is, well, if there's no input, there's not going to be any output. And apparently in however long they did the study, he had a little bit of water, and all that ever showed up in his output was some urination. So, does that officially prove this? No, but, again, I think it's an idea to consider we come to the idea that, intention drives everything, perception drives everything, and that this universal energy is something we can get access to, but who has time in our society to sit and meditate in a cave all day and to be able to tap into this amount of energy?
Well, for me, I'm going to go ahead and say that I think while it is possible, and I think it is extremely possible to do very extreme fast, especially if you're at least including water, because if you can incorporate water in there, I've done 72 plus hours before myself, and after the first day you actually don't really feel hungry until mm-hmm. you start to eat again. Mm-hmm. And so I'm sure there would be a point. I didn't push it. It's not like I tried to go a week or anything, but I would definitely be interested in studying the limits of this possibility,
Mm-hmm.
So we're actually getting to the next little grouping, which relates to psychic abilities, which you and I actually did an episode on your return.
Yep.
So we'll probably go through this fairly quickly, but why don't you take psychic healing?
I don't know anything about that at all.
What? My back begs to differ, sir.
Right. At its core, psychic healing is an exchange of energy. It's like a conversation that takes place between two people's energies. Psychic healing involves one individual transferring healing energy to someone who needs it, and the other person receiving that healing energy.
You know more about this than I do.
Yeah, that's kind of a nutshell of it, and we've, I've talked a lot about it, referencing other things.
Go back and listen to our other episodes.
But I will say, for me, I've actually experience a slight shift in the idea of healing here, and that it was often has been and can be thought of in this way of this exchange of energy. What I found it almost more about is holding space, holding tapping into whatever somebody's pain is, whether it's mental, emotional, spiritual, in their energy. And it's more about allowing and holding space for that, for them to process through and release it themselves. I was actually very inspired. We watched that documentary on Ram Dass.
Yes.
And he
great
mentioned
documentary and great individual. I wish I'd gotten to see him before he passed, but thank you for all your work.
Yeah. But in particular, he did a lot of work, for those who don't know, later in his life about setting up essentially dying institutes to really ease that transition for people. And he was talking about some of the work he did, and an example, and I hadn't heard of this until I watched the documentary, but when he was just doing this work himself, and he got this call, and he goes to this woman who's had some sort of horrible, painful, terminal thing. He says, I basically went to the meditation, and in Buddhism, they have you do it like in front of a corpse.
Yeah.
And he basically just held this space, and then she cried, felt, present. He says, well, that's basically what I do. And I believe on the ride home, he got a call that she had passed through the night. And that just really turned me on to this idea of really, like, instead of, you know, trying to fix somebody, holding space and allowing for them to be and allowing that to just rise and release. And when I come down to it, whether people have come to this realization or not, that's what I think psychic healing is really all about, you know, because if you're trying to, like, direct energy and stuff, you know, that can be a little bit, you know, there can get ego involved in that and, you know, it can be messy, you know. And so this is just a newer understanding I've come to develop of it for myself.
Well, I want to add to the Ram Dass story there. And there's a story that he told that was told to him as well. And it's about Buddhist monks that have to write a death poem. And so this monk was getting older and older and older. And I hope I don't butcher this. Eventually, you know, his students are getting really worried. You know, you haven't written your death poem yet. And he's like, okay, I'll go sit down. And he's like, you know, life is this, life is thus. Poem or no poem, what's the fuss? And then he dies. And it's just that being able to let go. It's mm-hmm. that, okay, I guess I've done what I need to do. My death poem is done. It's time for me to die. In a lot of Buddhist beliefs, like lamas and stuff are supposed to believe or supposed to be able to take three breaths and sit up and leave their body, basically. You know, peaceful leaving of this earth.
Mm-hmm.
I hope that I get anything close to that. So we have touched on this next thing before. You want to take the first little section here?
Remote viewing is the practice of seeking impressions about a distant or unseen target, purportedly sensing with the mind. Remote viewing experiments have historically been criticized for lack of proper controls and repeatability.
Yeah, there have been some very big budget and lots of research and confusing results that they don't really talk about. And then when we do get the results, I keep wanting to, like, spread them out there, but I can't even find them to share half the mm-hmm. time. So Gerald O'Donnell is the founder and president of ARVARI, which is the Academy of Remote Viewing and Remote Influencing. And from remoteviewinglight.com, I'm going to quote here, "When you read his biography on his site, you may wonder why a man of his caliber would have chosen to leave his very successful career behind and dedicate his time and efforts to an institute like the Academy of Remote Viewing. Believe me, there's a huge difference between working as a technical commodity expert for companies like Payne Weber, now USB Payne Weber, and teaching people remote viewing and influencing." It goes on to say, "In the course of his life, Mr. O'Donnell has touched many fields. It was no surprise to me to find out that he once has been one of the most recommended market prediction gurus in the financial arena. His affinity with the financial market still shows up on his website today, and his predictions in the matter regularly astonish the most skeptical in the financial field." I'm going to stop real quick and just remind you that these are all from his own website, and there are no stats backing this up or any, you know, thing talking about his claims. I'm sure I might mention this later on, but I wanted to throw that real quick. Anyway, that's when he was supposedly approached by a Western European intelligence agency in order to join and set up an experimental program of mental espionage, remote viewing, and mind control technologies in order to increase the precognitive abilities and intelligence gathering effectiveness of deep cover agents and counter-terrorist teams. The effort was also meant to keep up with very advanced Eastern European developments in these psychotronic fields. His personal discoveries in that period of his life, about which he seldom speaks, undoubtedly brought out the essence of the man as how we know him today, a person with great inner strength. Based on the deep kindness of his heart, he decided to withdraw from the intelligence community and to dedicate his life and acquired knowledge to the benefit of all mankind. In his own claim, humoristic and non-pretentious ways, he explains complex matters like the workings of our inner mind and shows in a comprehensible way how we can explore our inner kingdom and influence our reality. Okay, so Gerald O'Donnell was mentioned on the map, so I had to make sure I covered him here, but I get a little self-aggrandizement kind of thing going on here with him a little bit. Most of the people that I've actually studied who seem genuine are more like Russell Targ, who is just very matter-of-fact about things, you know mm-hmm. what I mean?
But too, if, you know, and I'm not saying this gives this any credence or anything, but, you know, this story here about somebody, you know, supposedly brought into the intelligence community, you know, does all this work, and then comes to this place of, you know, stepping down and wanting to live from a more altruistic place, reminds me a little bit of the men who stare at goats, is, you know, that they
absolutely.
They trained this psychic army, and what happens when you get people doing all these spiritual practices? They realize that war is a bad idea.
And I can totally see that, and I can totally see how that could be a story. I mm-hmm. think that it's when people try to use that more for money than for helping.
Right, and, which is you know, such a common trapping across, you know, pretty much we've seen it in every philosophy. You know, look at the Christian televangelists, look what happened with Oso down here in Oregon.
Yeah.
You know, all that kind of stuff. You know, it unfortunately, you know, people can claim to ascribe to whatever philosophy they do and have some intellectual understanding of it, but at the end of the day, people are people, and you have to be mindful.
I agree. Well, I think that is a nice little basic roundup for remote viewing and this guy here. Let's go ahead and move on to auras. I know you're pretty familiar with that, so why don't you mm-hmm. take that one?
So, on our outline here, we have one interpretation of the auras is that as human beings, we radiate a very low level of electricity that's otherwise known as an electromagnetic field, says Christina Lonsdale, a Portland-based artist behind a popular aura photography practice called Radiant Human. Ancient medical systems believe that this energy is expressed in seven layers. Each layer is said to correlate to a different element of your physical, mental, spiritual, and emotional health. It is thought that these layers can interact with one another and influence your overall health.
What else do you know about it?
And so, for one, yes, this has been commonly thought of as, you know, we're the base and the auric field emanates out from us. I think of it as rather as if you think of everything originating from source coming down to each of us into individuation, that that's, you know, sort of like in the same, this new idea that, you know, some people say that instead of the brain being the seed of consciousness, rather it's the receiver of consciousness, you know, this universal energy comes down, essentially comes to more and more of a dense vibration into us. It's not so much that we're emitting the aura, that the aura is coming down into physical reality. And yes, there are what are commonly thought of as, you know, yeah, the seven layers, and they correspond very closely with the chakras. You know, our first layer, it's essentially the energetic blueprint of the body. You know, it, you know, for those that can see, it basically looks like, well, if you've ever seen like any of Alex Gray's work, especially like when the skin and the muscles stripped away, and you just kind of see that energetic outline.
Amazing.
That's kind of what like the first layer of the aura is like. The second, most very much to our emotional selves, just like the second chakra. You know, the third is about our mental processes and how that all interacts, and especially our linear logical thinking. The fourth layer, just like the fourth chakra, is all about our love center, not only for ourselves, but about humanity overall. The fifth layer.
Hey, I'm glad you have the resource, because you're already speaking a whole lot above my head at this point.
Yeah, I am looking this up to make sure I'm accurate, because I'll tell myself a little bit. When you follow intuition, sometimes the terminology falls when you don't practice it a lot. You know, I can tap in and feel exactly what needs to be done, and sometimes I have to remind myself of the name.
Yeah, I get it. Yeah, you lose that part.
So, yes, our fifth auric level is connected with our with higher will and sort of like that intuitive guidance coming through a little bit. The sixth level is more about like celestial love and like that love of the divine that's maybe even a little bit more beyond the capacity of what we have as humans that, you know, we're always striving for.
Okay.
And the seventh layer, that is essentially the first individuation of personal consciousness from source. You know, where it really kind of, we start to come down into, like, again, that vibration of our individual selves.
To me, it reminds me a little bit of the chakras, mm-hmm. and very much where the six chakras, where we're, you know, maybe the best strive to get to, and that seventh crown chakra, that cord that connects us to the all, is, you know, the near elusive. Very interesting, but that's just my own personal randomness there.
And
go ahead.
Yeah, so those are the different layers, and and just like the chakras, there can be, you know, very, very physical ways about the way our lives that can turn out to then cause distortions in the auric field, or vice versa. Things off the energy can manifest through into our physical lives. And, you know, there's been, you know, and again, this is something that is still going through, you know, all the proper channels to say of being quote unquote scientifically proven. But you know, things resonated with each other. You know, we've talked about how, like, you know, somatics, you know, how vibrations influence vibrations, and, you know, how you can, you know, have you ever known that somebody's standing too close to you when you can't actually see them, you know?
Yeah, you get that interrupted personal space. You feel that.
You can feel that. You know, we all have a bubble.
Yeah. Some have a larger bubble than others.
Mm-hmm.
I think you did a good job of covering that, and I appreciate you being able to add more. Anyway, so, all right, I'm going to let you off the hook there and go to past life recall, which we touched on a little bit and is fairly self-explanatory as far as the term goes. It's an ability, you know, basically being able to recall your past lives or selves on Earth, and fits into reincarnation and all the other Eastern philosophies there. Anything you want to say on past life recall?
I think we've, you know, through the ways we've touched on it here and there throughout the thing, I think people can go and piece that together for themselves, you know, that we've kind of already touched on it.
Yeah,
absolutely. You know, and there's lots of access out there between, you know, the traditional, more Eastern thoughts, and actually this exists quite a bit in, you know, if you want to dive deep in what you can find about pre-Christian European beliefs as well. But, you know, we also have, you know, modern-day psychologists and hypnotherapists doing past life regression too. So, you know, there's lots of different resources and points of view to look at on this subject.
Well, thank you for that. And I've said this before, the last term in this section was psychic and intuitive empath. And like I said, if you really want to hear more on this topic, I suggest listening to Sean and I talk in episode 16. We talk a lot about different types of psychic intuition, things like that. Very good overview here.
Mm-hmm.
Also, we're nearing an hour 45 on the recording, and if I break it up at this point right now, that leaves us a very fun episode coming up this next week dealing with aliens, the future, and psychedelics. I think that's a good way to end this metaphysical section next week, so why don't we go ahead and wrap this up? Is there anything you wanted to add on any of these topics we covered today?
Not at this point. You know, I mean, I think they just kind of naturally expand as they go because it's so interwoven and you know, seeing how everything overlap, it just...
Yeah. Everything is connected, as they say.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I really appreciate having you here, Sean. Thank you again. Maybe we can talk Chris into joining us again next week. I think he'd enjoy the aliens and random ideas.
Sure.
Let's see if we can make it in another 2 hours, though.
Yes, yes.
All right. Thank you, everybody. Thank you again for listening to Sean and I discuss this strange piece of pop art. I hope you enjoyed exploring this segment as much as I did. I want to give a special thanks to all of our listeners. You are the reason I'm doing this. Please tell your friends about us, follow us on Spotify, subscribe to us on YouTube, or wherever else you're listening. And if you can, please leave a comment or a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. It really will help with visibility. You can also support us on Patreon or connect with us on the social media of your choice. We are at Awakened Exchanges on Facebook and Instagram, and at Awaken Exchanges on Twitter. Thanks again, and have a blessed day.